All right, let's get to the magic hat.
It's the magic hat.
Yeah, baby. That's what I've been waiting for.
Bring it on. Basically, a bunch of topics.
Yeah.
And we have no idea where the sports gods want us to go.
Okay.
Until Swag pulls it out of his magic hat.
Hocus pocus. Where are you?
Now you see me. Now you don't.
It's magic.
It's simply what it is. It's magic. We don't know what's going to come out of this hat.
Where is that rabbit?
Abracadabra, MFers. Let's do the magic hat.
The only thing this hat's good for is the trash can.
Hey, welcome back in the fourth hour of the radio program. It's a nice little fourth hour. We got Brady Henderson going to join us coming up here.
This should fly by.
It'll fly right by. 3 hours have already flown by. Sorry for the three-minute update there from Swag. We would have been right on time, but he wouldn't shut up. So, you know, that can happen. 9:03, welcome into the Rose City. I hope your day is going well. I'm getting some pushback in the office. People getting upset that I'm accusing them of coming in at a certain time of the day.
We're here every morning. I know who the first ones are every damn day.
I know. Kooglude's is out here. He's like, really? No one here before 9? I'm here every day. And I'm like, yeah.
That's what we said.
Most days.
We didn't say before 8.
Some days.
Some people were claiming here they're before 8. There's nobody here before 8 unless something's wrong.
All I would say is some days, not so much.
Yeah.
And most days, it's all right.
I'm here every day at 5 a.m.
Bright and early. We'll talk to Brady Henderson coming up at the bottom of the hour. Let's dive into the old magic hat. What does the magic hat have in store for us?
Let's see.
One of these, by the way, I had audio for, and I forgot to pull it.
Oh, no.
And it sucks because it might have been nice to have.
Time is money. This is my loan entry.
Time is money. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
The French Open at famed Roland Garros is going on.
Do you want to talk about Naomi Osaka's outfits?
I thought it was fantastic.
I do, too.
She's awesome.
I like Naomi Osaka.
I don't know what people's problems are with her. I really don't.
Well, she is an athlete of an era that talks about an issue that a lot of people never talk about until recently. And because she talks about it, she's viewed a certain way because of it.
She's awesome.
I don't want to play. I'm mentally not feeling it. This goes back to the Simone Biles Olympics thing.
Yeah,
I'm done participating. I like having anxiety attacks and I'm mentally not with it. Oh, how dare you? And then, like, you get people that talk about the toughness and the get through it. You think I mentally want to do this every day. So I think it's that crowd. I love Naomi Osaka. It's more to me like sometimes we highlight the wrong stuff.
Yes.
Unique outfit. Yeah. Stop making it the main headline.
Yeah.
The tennis should be the main
headline. Tennis should be the main
headline. And she's a great tennis player.
Well, we are in the midst of, we had the WNBA lockout situation. They needed a CBA.
Yeah.
The NFL referees, there was a threat there.
Yep.
Major League Baseball now, the Players Association gave their first proposal for a new CBA to them. We don't often think about, tennis, because it's an individual sport. It's not there's no players union or anything.
Mm-hmm.
They limited, so the top players, they usually come in kind of like golf where the big names will do a pre-tournament press conference. Well, they said, we're only giving you 15 minutes.
Hmm.
That's it.
For the biggest name players in the world.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Sabalenka, Jannik Sinner.
Yep.
15 minutes, we're done. And they're making a point.
Because they're going through these labor disputes?
So they have been, for the last several years, on the Grand Slam tournament powers that be over the total purses.
Hmm.
And you have seen... you have seen the total amounts of purses and they announced the winner's check is going up this much and this much.
Mm-hmm.
However, the players are saying, let's not get caught up in that because look at the total revenues that those tournaments are generating.
Yeah.
Our percentage of the overall revenue pool continues to get cut. It dipped below 15% at the French Open this year. On their regular tour events, the ATP and WTA, their big tournaments, they get 22%. The prize pool is 22% of the revenue
generated.
So
a major, it's dropped 7%.
And so they, and the percentage continues to go down.
Interesting.
And they are to a point where it has been bantied about publicly by players. The only thing left, because they don't have a union, they don't.
Is to just not show up and play.
Is to boycott.
Yeah.
And what it would mean.
Boy, could you imagine if like your top 10 players.
Yeah.
Did not show up to a major championship.
So Sinner, Carlos Alcaraz, Novak Djokovic.
Yep.
Arena Sabalenka, Coco Gauff, Naomi Osaka.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The names you know in the
yes.
sport. Yeah, imagine they didn't go to this.
I mean, how much tennis do people watch of their own, let alone you're tuning into Wimbledon and the U.S. Open.
You might
and
watch the final round of most exactly. of these for most
and
sports
And if you
fans,
know they're not there to begin with.
I couldn't care less.
You wouldn't even know if that tournament was being played or
if
not.
If you told me the French Open was two guys who are ranked outside the top 25 of their sport, no offense. I wouldn't watch.
And it could be great because I'm convinced if I can get your eyeballs to a tennis match.
Oh, it's a great sport. There's no doubt about
and
it.
And you get the drama and compelling and all of a sudden it's going five sets and it's back and forth and guys are athletic and all of that sort of stuff. You'll stay with it. I just got to figure out a way to get your eyeballs to it in the first place.
Yeah, and if you take those guys away, you won't get my eyeballs.
Yeah.
And I'm somebody that's actually played the sport.
Yeah.
I know how hard and incredibly
You understand the sport.
Is.
You know how athletic
yes.
it is.
Yep.
All of those sorts of
it's
things.
It's insane. And, like, when we watch these Wimbledons, like Dirt was asking Wimbledon, Wimbledons are really long now. And they've always kind of been long, but, like, some of these are going 5+ hours.
Yeah.
And it's nuts. And there's, like, I can leave and run an errand and be okay, kind of a golf vibe with it.
Mm-hmm.
But in that moment, when you're at if you're at Wimbledon, like you're probably so in a trance of like exceptional tennis. If you have a major championship and you lose these people because they're protesting, you're going to have a huge problem on your hands. And talk about getting something you want and how you get it done. This is one way to do it.
Yeah.
This is I'll be curious to see next year. This comes around. This doesn't get solved. How many back out
they're,
last
they're
minute?
Trying to talk. I mean, they can't get the suits to sit down with them because, and this is what's very hard about an individual sport like that. You know, and they don't, had Serena still been in the sport, you know, actively participating and kind of at the height of her game, she might have been a figure, maybe Roger Federer, they might have been able to say, we're not showing up unless you do X, but I don't know that they have somebody that's that transcendent right now in the game, even though the talent is off the charts.
As good as it's been.
As good as it's been.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, that's a crazy one. I didn't see that story.
So, yeah, go look in, though, and I would be curious if they got to a point what it would take. I think it would either be the Australian or the French. I don't think the players have it in them to actually say, I'm not going to Wimbledon, I'm not going to the U.S. Open, especially if you are a top-ranked player in the prime of your career. That's a hard decision to make. All right, next up. Can we focus? Please focus.
It's an interesting time being in the city of Portland. A lot going on. Okay. A lot of issues.
Yeah.
A lot of concerns.
Yeah.
Trying to get business going.
A lot of vacancy.
And it feels like, weirdly, we're also doing the dumbest things to not solve issues. Which is no shocking development to anybody out there.
Well, look at politics across the globe.
I know. I totally understand. I'm trying to focus on our
bus.
Okay?
On yes.
us. We just had one of the more universal bipartisan double birds, both sides to the aisle, to our government on the gas bill. Did we not? It's like an 86%?
Yeah.
It was something overwhelming, right?
The transportation bill that they
tried to tax you more for gas.
Tried to approve without voter and, flew like a lead balloon.
I don't understand certain things, and I'm not going to pretend to know everything. I don't know why we're concerning ourselves of calling 39th a new name from Cesar Chavez Boulevard.
Okay, whatever.
Just call 39th
that's fine.
And be good, whatever.
Sure.
Okay, fine. You tell
it's
me that's important.
It's a street.
There is something that's popping up, and it's getting the eyeballs and attention, and I saw this, and I'm kind of one of these people, and I was like, why are we doing this? Are you familiar with the Peace Act that's circulating in Oregon?
The who?
It's the Peace Act. So it's the people for the elimination of animal cruelty exemptions. Have you seen this? So it's initiative petition 28. They've gotten the signatures.
Okay.
And a lot of groups are saying that this is going to be on the ballot. I don't know if it's going to finish the way the gas tax will, but it kind of feels like it is. Basically, this is to animal rights groups and activists. They want to cut down on the cruelty of animals. And so they've gotten enough signatures that surpass the threshold to get this on the ballot, over 120,000 signatures.
Okay.
As of Wednesday.
What does it actually do? Because, yes, should we be cruel to animals? No. But what are they saying constitutes cruelty to animals?
Hunting and fishing.
Yeah.
That. Right there.
No.
And I'm like, as somebody who does fish, I buy a fishing license.
Yeah,
I saw
you
this
have to get
went.
A hunting license. They control population.
It outlaws all forms of hunting, trapping, and fishing, including catch and release, because they don't want the fish to get hurt.
That's not going to fly in this state.
Well, I'm just...
I don't know how...
Why is this an issue?
I don't know.
Is this
either.
A topic? Is there animal cruelty hunting world I don't know about?
I don't know.
Because all the people that I do know, I know through other people that hunt... I follow a couple of our listeners on social media. They fish. I fish. I've caught and released with no damage to the fish. And sometimes you catch the fish, you eat the fish.
Yeah.
Sometimes you hunt the deer, you eat the deer. You elk, give me an elk burger, an elk meatball. I'm very confused why this is an issue.
I don't know.
And if somebody can chime in and help me out here, educate me. I've read up on it a little bit. I don't understand
the
purpose of it.
I eat meat.
This I eat. We should just keep that as a drop. I'm sorry, I eat meat.
So
that should be a drop.
Well,
I need you to pull that during the break.
Maybe I'm not, comfortable, guns and all of that sort of stuff. Certainly if I have friends that go hunt and they say, "Yeah, I got an elk or whatever," I'm the first one to say, "Ah, I'd love some elk steaks, some venison steaks."
I don't hunt at all.
I love to cook.
I don't hunt. My brother-in-law's dad goes to like Alaska and hunts moose and elk, and he brings back a ton of meat because he usually gets one, and they're always like, "Do you want any?" And I'm like, "Yeah, man, I'll take that. That's some lean, good eating right there."
I don't know what we're doing.
Exactly. What are we doing? It feels like we've lost the plot.
We're scoping it in. You have to get a tag where we don't want the populations to go south. So there's a time and an area and a space and proper ways to go about doing it.
Well, also, how are we paying for like conservation and wildlife stuff here?
Yeah.
Through licenses, through tags.
I don't know. I'm lost there.
I have no idea. I saw this and I'm like, dude, I can't go fishing.
Yeah.
Come on.
Dumbest ever.
Dumbest ever.
That's a bold statement.
Well, I want to ask your thoughts on this. I could have pulled the audio and it may have helped it, but I'm still like, if I told you what it was, you may agree without the audio.
Okay.
So are you one of these, I want to break or set a Guinness World Record people?
Quest to do one? No. Curious at times. Like I see one and I was like thinking, I could do that.
Yeah, I'm kind of one of those too. Like,
but am I going to go through? If you've ever,
are
looked,
you going to actively try to set one or break
no,
one? Me
no.
either, right? And
no.
I know there is a process to this,
and it's involved and lengthy, time consuming, and costly.
Yes. Now, I'm not. I'm one of these two. Like the way you explain it is how I view it.
Yeah,
too.
You
can
see
I break
one
that?
And go
can
that.
I do
that?
I
go you. Get a world record for that? I could do that.
This is one I say I could do that, but I never will actually back it up or try it.
Yeah.
And I also think it shouldn't count. I actually have a question to the Guinness World Record people here. I know there's a process of doing this.
Right.
Maybe we should have a stingier process and vetting system of like what needs to be a world record and what doesn't. Okay.
Yes.
There is an Idaho man who just set, after beating his own record, by the way, a Guinness World Record. Are you ready for this? By putting on 32 t-shirts in 1 minute.
Yeah, what are we doing? But again,
David Rush, previous t-shirt-related record holder, included the most t-shirts put on in 30 seconds and the fastest time to put on 10 t-shirts, tackled the title for most t-shirts put on in 1 minute by an individual.
So not only do we have putting on t-shirt world record, we have different classifications, like all of a sudden. So it's one thing to say you're the fastest swimmer. But right. Now we have
the fastest,
the 50 free and the 100 free and the 100 fly and the 100 breaststroke.
This is the most
for putting on,
for
now. Getting dressed.
Let me read his quote in the voice that I imagine, even though I know what his audio sounds like. The issues with how quickly the mechanics break down. Once you get past the 10th shirt, you're not just fighting the clock anymore because you're fighting the fabric. Each layer compresses your arms and you lose range of motion. You're essentially wearing a straitjacket.
Okay.
That is how I view this record.
Go join the circus.
What are we doing?
I don't know.
Why is there not a stricter world Guinness record process here?
Does Guinness need to grow its brand anymore?
I mean, when you think Guinness, you don't even think the record anymore. You think
no,
beer.
I'm looking for a pint in the Cascade.
Yeah. Have a better process. There's one more in there. At least there should be one. And this is right up your alley.
They did it.
Yes, they did it.
Did I not read this right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yes, they did it.
You know what? Hold the other one in there.
Okay.
And I'm going to rename it during the break for next week because I don't think it's going anywhere. And it's something I want to bring up. You may remember this quote during the NBA regular season to Joe Mazzulla.
However, there's a way to make sure that the staff and the players get the appreciation. Don't need it. I think it's a stupid award. They shouldn't have it. And it's more about the players and it's more about the work that the staff puts in. And it's just that simple. I really don't ever want to be asked or talked about it again. It's just that dumb. So the players play. It's about them. Staff works their ass off. I'm grateful to have them.
And the voter said, great answer. We're going
to
vote you.
He's going to have to talk about it some more.
He did talk about it some more. Joe Mazzulla has won NBA Coach of the Year after telling us how stupid and irrelevant the award is. This is fantastic. And I love that
I'm kind of disappointed the Celtics still aren't in the playoffs when he won the award. Yeah. So they'd have to award it to him and get the picture out here with
Adam
Silver.
Could you imagine a worse photo than the guy calling the award? He's just won dumb. Yeah. This is great. I actually love his answer. Coaches don't get sometimes, I think, enough credit in sports that move through coaches quickly. But also, he is right. It takes the staff and it takes the players
to play. I would like to see, much like you have the Joe Moore Award in college football for the most outstanding offensive line as a group.
The most outstanding staff?
The outstanding coaching staff.
How would you even evaluate
that? I don't know, but along his lines. And in college football, you have the Frank Broyles Award, which goes to the top, the outstanding assistant coach. I would like to see, because it's more than just a head coach.
Yeah.
Especially now that teams have 8 assistant coaches sitting there on the bench.
The benches are 2 rows now.
Exactly.
There's a lot of guys. And there's guys who aren't even technically coaches, but they're on staff and they're doing a ton
staff
of work. Yeah, I just loved that the voters gave him the award.
That was awesome.
It was fantastic.
Awesome all around. And I didn't see if – I'm wondering if he was asked to do a video or something because obviously –
He sent out a statement. He basically is like, thank you. He did the proper thank you thing. He didn't crap on it at least, which actually it would have been better if like, I told you I didn't want to talk about this stupid award. Thanks for voting for me, you jerks. And then got out of there, but he did the proper thank you.
He said, this is more about the dedication of our entire staff, and it's a culmination, and I accept this on their
behalf. He is the 4th Celtics coach to win the award.
Okay.
Yeah.
Auerbach must have won one back in the day. Did they even have one back then?
I think he's one of
them. Casey Jones, I'm assuming, won one.
Doc, I would say, won one.
Okay.
And then probably him.
Yeah.
Although, no, I bet you Brad Stevens is one of those.
Ooh.
Not Red. Yeah, I would guess Brad Stevens won one.
Okay.
I just know he's the 4th one.
Did Doc actually win one?
Well, if it's not Casey Jones, Stevens, and him, who else would it be? It'd have to be Doc, because the 90s Celtics
When did they start the award? I guess that's when I'd have to go look. Because Bill Russell was the player coach for a couple years.
I was trying to break on time, and now you're making me look up coaches of the year. I think he won in 08, Doc did.
Okay. Was that the year of their title or the next year?
I would imagine it had to be the year of the title, right? 08?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll look it up.
Okay.
Okay, there we go. Good stuff in the Magic Hat. Let's talk with Brady Henderson. Let's run it forward and visit Seahawk OTAs next on The Fan. All right, welcome back in. By the way, somebody texted in Swag and said, yeah, I'm a part of the largest YMCA dance ever recorded. I mean, sometimes that's just what the record's about. You're a part of it.
Well, sometimes when you're a part of a big group and somebody says, like, but was that guy the organizer? Like,
well,
your buddy says,
hey,
we're going to go do this thing. We need a whole bunch of people to do the YMCA. And you're like, oh, okay, I'll come. But you're not the organizer.
Side note.
I got to call Brady.
Always wanted to be in a flash mob. Never will be. I've always kind of wanted to be the random guy at like a town square. And the whole crowd's just acting like they're walking to different places. And all of a sudden, bam, whole thing busts out. Never will. Never have been. Always kind of secretly wanted to do it. We did a little NFL OTA audio. And also something that I've been thinking about that we'll kind of have to holster for the summer is I am so curious to see if this Rabel stuff plays in any way in the locker room and how it impacts the Patriots going forward. But we did some NFL OTA audio. We did Sean Mannion, J.J. McCarthy, Matt Stafford, somebody making a good point. No way Matt Stafford brings Ty Sims into his house. His wife might sleep with him to prove a point to Matt Stafford, as she said on a podcast once when they were at Georgia. Very valid point by a listener there. But I'm really curious to see as they don't run it back in Seattle. Oh, no, 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 no. They run it forward as the Seattle Seahawks are coming off their Super Bowl beatdown of the New England Patriots, and they're looking to see if they can repeat. So Swag's about to bring on Brady Henderson of ESPN, our good friend up there, covering the Seattle Seahawks, living on a boat, and OTAs are underway. He is on Twitter, at Brady Henderson. You can find all his great work at ESPN.com as he joins us now. Brady, good morning. How we doing?
I'm good. Good morning. When you said 9:27, I was like, wow, that's very specific. Is this a tea time or is this a radio hit? What are we doing?
Well, not to get too inside baseball, we changed our radio clock. So our break now, we come back at around 27. Today, we were about a minute and a half later than I thought we would in calling you. So it's a little inside baseball, but I wanted to really be specific with you to let you know. How is your off season? Do you even get an off season anymore? It feels like you guys don't have much downtime.
I've got an off season. I've had some fun. Yeah, thank you for the concern. No, I mean, obviously shorter than it would be if, you know, for a team that didn't make the playoffs. But I mean, the players, those are the ones that obviously have it tough because they, you know, their off season program started on April 20th, and I went and looked at a calendar the other day. It was 10 weeks and one day after the Super Bowl. So that is a short off season. And, you know, that's why Mike McDonald, you know, told a lot of veterans, they sort of came up with this idea for a staggered, start to the off season program where, you know, he says, okay, you know, veterans and guys who played a lot down the stretch because the break was so short, you know, he told those guys or encouraged them to, work remotely for the first couple weeks of the off season program and then show up, you know, for the start of phase one, 2 weeks later. And a lot of those guys showed up anyways for the first, you know, for the first day on April 20th. So point there is that off-season attendance has been pretty good like it was last year.
Yeah, Brady Henderson, our guest here, ESPN, he wrote a really good piece, and we had fun with it yesterday of like the Seahawks are not running it back, as you point out in your article. They're indeed running it forward now as they look to try to repeat and build on the success they obviously had last year. Like, look, it's one thing to win a title and to maybe surprise some people that you were able to win the title by the end of the season. I think a lot of people were like, okay, man, this team is legit. And then everything in the AFC kind of broke the way it did. And everybody loved their chances to win that Super Bowl. And they took advantage of that to get another title over there in the Renton offices. But I'm really curious your thoughts and vibe of just being around the franchise off of the Super Bowl. Mike McDonald's messaging, which you put into quotes at ESPN.com of, you know, we're not really focused anymore on what we did. We're trying to do something different and kind of do something similar. Just the vibes of what it's like around this Seahawk team, this version coming off the Super Bowl, because it's always going to be a little different than what it was with Pete Carroll.
Yeah, I don't remember what exactly it was like in 2014 when they were coming off of that, you know, that first Super Bowl win. But I'll tell you this, like, it really don't, like, and I think this is sort of intentional on their part. Like, mm-hmm. They don't talk a whole lot about it. I mean, it comes up naturally. You know, they got their ring ceremony coming up here in a few weeks. as I wrote in the story, you know, they installed this big banner commemorating their Super Bowl win, but I really don't get the sense that they talk about it a whole lot. That it comes up, and you know, I asked Mike McDonald kind of that question because I was curious about it. Is like, how often do you guys talk about it or acknowledge it? And he said they don't avoid it, but they don't go out of their way to talk about it. And I think that's intentional. I think partly intentional and partly just kind of the natural way of things happening when your job right now is to get ready for the next season. And so I thought McDonald had an interesting line where he said, you know, he hasn't sensed an ounce of complacency mm-hmm. with the team. And so, which obviously that there's a danger of that happening when you win a Super Bowl and there's so much, there's so many things that can come with that negatively. He says that he hasn't sensed any of that yet.
Yeah. It's interesting to go through too some of the roster adjustments and changes they have. I think we've talked to you post the Super Bowl. I think we had you on because Kenneth Walker, and then we had a draft thing. I'm kind of just curious of losing a guy like that wins the Super Bowl MVP. And then also when you win, guys kind of want to be rewarded for that. And it's not that winning the Super Bowl changes what Devon Witherspoon wants, but they win the Super Bowl. He's a big part of kind of what their defense was. Just some of the changes they're going to go through. And also, by the way, along this journey, you're going to have to start rewarding these guys who are helping you win.
Yeah, I mean, they took some hits. There's no doubt about it. And I think some people have kind of downplayed, the degree to which they, they lost some pieces there. And now I think you can look at it and say this, that look, they were never going to re-sign Rick Woolen or Boye Mafe. Those are two guys that they were open to trading at last year's trade deadline, and they were never going to re-sign those guys. But mm-hmm. still, good, solid players. I thought Ken Walker was maybe a little less than 50-50 that they were going to re-sign him. And then with Kobe Bryant, that one kind of felt 50-50. Now, look, like running backs and safeties, you can tend to find those guys. So I'm not, it might sound like I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth here. those are two positions that you can find, right? Yeah. You can find safety. They found Kobe Bryant in the fourth round. They found Ty Okada, who played really well in a fill-in role last year as an undrafted guy. And then running backs, we all know those guys can sort of be interchangeable to some degree. So they did lose some pieces, and it's not nothing, but I don't think they lost anybody that they can't replace. I think, I don't know if a lot of people are talking about this, but I think it's, maybe the biggest loss might be Clint Kubiak, just because, he is a proven coordinator with a proven NFL system and an experienced play caller. I understand why they hired Brian Fleury, and he obviously blew Mike McDonald away in those interviews when McDonald was, going into it, very much thinking that he was going to promote from within. Mm-hmm. But he hired Brian Fleury because the interview went so well. But Brian Fleury is going to be calling plays for the first time, and there's no substitute for that experience, and there's probably going to be some growing pains along the way. So, I don't think they lost anybody that was irreplaceable, but they lost a few pieces, and I think some people might sort of be, I've kind of gotten the sense that some people have just kind of dismissed that as, well, that's no big deal. You lose people every year. Yeah, but they took a decent amount of hits in free agency.
What's the area or the position for you? I know OTAs isn't necessarily camp, but you're starting to kind of evaluate. Your antennas are up a little bit. We get to camp. You continue to evaluate. What's the area for them on a team this good?
An area, can you say it again, please?
Just positional groups or a position group that you look at and maybe you got questions about or you're uncertain with as we go into OTAs now and camp is not that far away. And look, they're trying to defend the crown here. So it's an area that Brady Henderson is really kind of keeping an eye on.
Yeah, there's really no glaring position group like that for them. I mean, I would have said maybe edge, mm-hmm. Just because you know, that Boyamafe, until they signed Dante Fowler Jr., Boyamafe was the one guy that they lost that they had yet to really replace. Mm-hmm. But they signed Dante Fowler on a very team-friendly contract. And, you know, they did not have, they don't have, like, one premier, you know, Max Crosby. There's only one Myles Garrett, but, you know, they don't have that, like, premier all-pro type edge guy. The strength of that group last season was the fact that they could throw four guys at you that, you know, any one of those guys could impact the game. So you're sort of counting on a lot happening again. You're counting on DeMarcus Lawrence, you know, again, staying healthy at 33, and Ichenna Nwosu doing the same thing. You know, he's a couple years younger, but he'd obviously battled injuries for a couple seasons before staying healthy last year. And you're, you know, again, counting on another older player in Fowler, who I think is 32. So you're kind of hoping that things go right injury-wise on that edge group, but there are some young guys that they have there that they're excited about, including, you know, some undrafted guys that really didn't play a whole lot last year. So that would be the one concern. Not that it's a concern right now on paper with the talent, more so just the fact that you're relying on some older players there along in, you know, in the outside linebacker rotation.
Rams are 4 yards away from picking up a first down near an end zone. It's a great game. The difference between the home field seems to be a running back picking up a football and a two-point conversion that ends up being counted. Like, it's the slimmest of margins here. Just your overall thoughts of the Rams offseason moves. Like, I know the Niners had a good season, a surprise good season, but it feels like these two teams are kind of the top of this division. The Seahawks won the Super Bowl. The Rams are clearly all in. Just your kind of takeaways, I think, of the Rams and going in and having maybe another couple of great heavyweight matches between these two.
Yeah, I mean, I think that NFC Championship game was the Super Bowl for all intents and purposes, because I don't think either the Broncos, even if Bo Nix had stayed healthy, and certainly not the Patriots, were beating either one of those teams, you know, Seattle or Los Angeles. If either one of those teams had made the Super Bowl, I don't think any of the final two AFC teams were going to beat them, just because they were the two best teams in the NFL, and that was pretty clear probably right around the time of that Week 15 Thursday night game. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just this neck and neck. These two teams were neck and neck. I think those first two games, if I remember correctly, were decided by a combined 3 points. And it was, even if you combine the yardage of those two games, it was like a couple yards separated them and 3 points. And then it obviously goes down to the wire again in the NFC Championship game. So they were neck and neck. And, you know, you could argue easily that, you know, if they were neck and neck talent-wise and the Seahawks lost the players that they did, along with their offensive coordinator in free agency. And the Rams, meanwhile, loaded up in their secondary with the trade for Trent McDuffie, signed Jalen Watson from the Chiefs, really added to their cornerback room. You could make a case that, you know, that maybe they overtook Seattle. Maybe they jumped ahead of Seattle talent-wise. And that's why, you know, I can promise you that the Seahawks were not at all disappointed to see the Rams spend the 13th pick on a guy in Ty Simpson, who is not going to help them anytime soon unless there's an injury to Matthew Stafford. And so I can tell you that they were pretty relieved when the Rams made that pick.
Yeah, especially when you listen to the audio post-draft, and it sounds like McVay's in a hostage video and didn't want to take him. And then they, oh, actually, what are you talking about? We wanted him the whole time. It's like, I don't know about that, man. But I'm fascinated to see it. OTAs have begun for a lot of teams. Seahawks defending the crown. As he notes in his ESPN.com article of running it forward, they unveiled the banner, but they're not really talking about it. They're just focusing on what's ahead. I'm sure we'll do a camp check-in. Continued great success at ESPN. You're doing a great job, man. You're one of our favorites. And I hope once this is over, you enjoy the next version of your offseason before camp is underway. Brady Henderson, ESPN.com, our guest today. Thanks, Brady, for hopping on, man.
You got it. Thank you, my friend. We'll talk to you later.
All right, there we go. Good stuff from Brady Henderson up in Seattle, as the Seahawks are largely just not acknowledging they won the Super Bowl outside of a banner hang, which probably the right approach. You want to repeat. You can't just dwell on what you just did. You got to look forward. Good stuff from him at ESPN.com. We wrap it up with an interesting little story that happened in the association that we're very, very familiar with. We'll talk about that on the other side on The Fan. All right, welcome back in. Good stuff from Brady Henderson. A little peekaboo up north with our friends in Seattle. Live from a boat. Boats and braids. Braids and boats. Boats and hoes. Brady's no hoe. For show. A delightful little Thursday. I don't know what that was. I you know, when you start something and you can't stop it, kind of like when I start dancing at a wedding. What is that move? I don't know, man. I'm just kind of going with it, you know? Call it something.
You like Elaine from Seinfeld?
I want to think I'm way cooler than that, but the reality is there's probably video of me way too drunk at a wedding doing the Elaine in some Park Rose rendition of it. What do you mean? I'm seawalking with your thumbs and your little kicks? I don't know, man.
Your jeans down around your hips.
I mean, I have some stripping videos at weddings, too. I've had some ladies sit in some chairs. There's been some grinding action gone on. Magic Brandon. A fun little Thursday. Swag, if you didn't catch it at the beginning, Swag is running on like an hour of sleep. His dad is still battling, doing a good job, but like some stuff's happened. So Swag's life has been derailed in a major way, and it's been nice to, I hope, unplug a
yes.
little bit
yep.
from what's going on outside of here.
Yes.
So it's been a fun Thursday edition. We've gotten to a lot. We still have a lot we didn't get to. I want to get to some more NFL OTA stuff tomorrow.
Yeah.
And we'll have Game 6. Do the Thunder do it?
Do the Thunder do it?
I don't know.
Do the Spurs do it?
I'm betting on the Thunder tonight, and it's not a pro-Thunder, anti-Spur. I just feel like they're going to play better than they did in Game 4, and it feels like they're going to do it. But I hope for sports fans viewing, we get a Game 7. Game 7 would be delightful.
I think the Knicks are hoping for that, too. They'd love to see these two just beat each other senseless for two more games.
I am one that like, because
the
not,
Knicks will be on the road no matter who wins.
Right, they're going to be hosting Game 3 no matter what.
Exactly.
To me, I've scratched the idea that one or the other, like both of these teams are kind of banged up. They're obviously trading body blows, and yeah, the East sucks. There's no doubting that. I don't think the Knicks couldn't have beaten any of the teams these two teams have beaten in the West. I think if you put the Knicks, I don't know if the Knicks make the conference finals if they have to play one of these two along the way, but if you said beat the Timberwolves, I think they can do it. If you said beat the Blazers, I think they could do it. Beat the Lakers without Luka, I think they can do it. Like, if you, the Suns.
The Nuggets.
I think they could beat the Nuggets. Like, there's not a team in the West I look at with the Knicks that say, they can't do it. So, yeah, the East sucks. I also think they are potentially the second or third best
team. They rolled the East.
And they rolled the East. They're on a heater right now.
Yeah.
So, kind of wait and see on that one. I hope we get a great game. That's really bare minimum. Give me a great game, and I think the atmosphere is going to be electric.
I think the X factor is Chet Holmgren. If Chet gets off and he has a big game, then the Thunder will win.
I think the X factor is on the other team.
If you're like, where's Chet? What are we doing?
I think we're looking at a combo package here. It's a Fox Harper game. You need one of them. One of them has to give you something.
Yeah.
I know Wimby can be heroic. He can lift a team. Maybe he's tired, whatever.
He needs a little help.
He's got to get help, man. Like, at least the Thunder, for all the Chet stuff, they've at least got it from who? Their center and their wing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, SGA has had some
And then
good
the
games,
bench is, some, you know, somebody will go nuts off the bench drilling threes.
That was what the game three was. They scored, what, 76 points off the bench or something crazy
insane,
like that?
Something insane, yeah.
So I think for the Spurs, it's Fox or Harper. Random note to end on.
Okay.
Not really something I think full segment worthy. And I'm not trying to make light of this. I'm just highlighting the fact of, did you see yesterday the Lakers?
I didn't. You pointed this out to me. I did not delve into it.
So they had layoffs.
Yeah.
By the way, second round of layoffs in the new ownership regime. I'm not telling you people should be losing their gigs. I don't like it. I hate it. But it is, and they didn't reach the number of the Blazers, but that's supposed to be a deep-pocketed ownership group.
Exactly.
They laid off communication staff, team content people, and business.
Yeah.
Literally the same.
Same group. Yeah.
Not as many people.
No.
But it's their second wave of doing it. Just highlighting, like, yeah, new ownership groups come in and they kind of want their own people and they make changes. Not saying it's right. Just, you know. There's a big story here and Another team just did it, and that's not a broke bitch. The Lakers are not run by a broke bitch.
No.
So, Tommy Two Knuckles, not alone there. Good stuff, Swag. Thanks for hanging with us and getting
through it.
And we might have Mike Doc Parker tomorrow.
Yeah, we got to preview the Eugene Regional.
We've got Bill Oram at 8.
Beautiful.
Mr. Move the Team.
Yeah.
And we got NFL OTAs, a Game 6. A delightful little sports evening. Enjoy your Thursday. The Firm with Harris Meringue is next. Thanks for hanging with us. This has been Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 105.1 The Fan.